Lucille, that was absolutely beautiful. The Lord is, by His grace, He is raising up wonderful spiritual mothers. In our congregation. You'll see them taking their place more and more all the time with something very unique and beautiful and powerful to impart. Yeah. So we add to that Happy Mother's Day. And to my own mother who's here, who just this week was saying, how come you don't point me out more from the pulpit? And I quote, with your being bishop and all. No, she doesn't like it when I point her out. But Happy Mother's Day to my own mother, who's part of this congregation and who has been my spiritual mother as well as a biological mother. Well, good morning, everyone. It's good to be together in worship. I'd like to turn my thoughts this morning mostly to people who are new here. But a lot of new people join us in the last number of months. And some of them might have even been in the last couple years, but still feel newish. And if you are in that position, I'm sure you're looking to understand who we are and how to find your place in this family. So I want to offer a few words of instruction. We began on a journey many years ago. It's a church, and a lot of it had to do with one Bible verse. And it was this, that Jesus, the scriptures tell us, is coming back for a glorious church. Pardon me, a glorious bride without spot or wrinkle. And so we began to dream about that a little bit. And if He is coming back for a glorious church, what does that look like? How would you build such a thing? Glorious in which ways? And as we thought about that church and that verse, it led us on to another where Jesus said, I will build my church. Meaning this is about Jesus. And so we ask questions like, what if we were to build that for Him? What if we were to build something we've never seen before? Something more beautiful than we've ever seen, more glorious. What happens if we were to build it for Jesus and not for us? We didn't actually build it to meet our own personal needs. But that if we could understand what are His needs, what is His dreams, what is His destiny that it, for His church, how is it meant to bring glory to Him, and what happens if we build it more for Him than for us? And how do we make it glorious? And so when people join themselves to us, we see them in the light of those words, that we don't see you coming to us as fellow members, but we see you coming to us as co-builders, as people that God has sent, but you've sent to join us in something, to help us figure things, to help us pursue a dream that is for His glory. We don't see you as spectators, that we're providing a spiritual form of dinner theater, but we see you as participators. That church isn't something that is being done for us as much as something that is being done with us. It's something that we're building together. And of course, it takes time for us to understand how to take our place in that. The church isn't a place where we advance our own individual plans and put forth our own individual needs as much as a place where we collectively advance the will of Jesus on earth. And as nice as those words might seem, few of us realize how much our old ways of thinking about church are still in us. And you can tell it when the first time your own personal need doesn't get met. And your own personal plan doesn't get advanced. Then we realize, I'm still in a process of personal transformation, of making this more about him than me. And so if you're here today, I actually believe Jesus is sending you, that he has sent you. I think you carry something inside of you that is unique and something that we need. I also understand that it takes time to walk with people in relationship for you to discover what that is and for us to discover what that is. But nevertheless, that's a good belief. And that this affects us in ways both great and small. The belief that God sends people here to build something together, to build a community, to build a community of love, to build a community that will glorify Jesus on earth and do things his way, affects us in lots of ways. Maybe some things, ways we don't always think about. A couple examples. Write down as practical as how we treat our facility. I noticed after a service, of course, discarded Starbucks cups everywhere. And when I say that, all the Tim Hortons people shake your head at those awful Starbucks guys. And think, I would never do that. Tim Hortons customers wouldn't do that. Which is not a big deal. The mindset maybe is this, though. We are not the movie mill. Because at the movie mill, part of you thinks, you know, at the end of the movie, they're paying someone really big bucks to pick up my popcorn and pop container. You know what I mean? And so if I don't leave my pop there, and if I don't spill my popcorn all over the ground, someone's going to be put out of a job. You know, and then the movie mill will have like this excess money they won't know what to do with. And so I understand, at least when you're at the movie mill, you probably think, you're doing some guy a favor, paying for his BMW payments. But this isn't the movie mill. Because the movie mill, of course, is we go there as a form of entertainment. You go there to escape work. You're not really going to build the business. You're not going because you're part of the movie mill community. Though I think it's still nice, though, when you could do nice and unexpected things for people. Even the guy giving out popcorn, you could maybe even take the moment there to say, how's your day going? Just take up for a moment to step out of this consumeristic mindset and actually care for people around us. But how much less when you come to church? We are not the movie mill. There's nobody paid the big bucks. Going to come and clean up all your rubbish. Meaning, we're actually building something together here. We're doing this for each other. We're doing this because we love each other. We're all pitching in. All putting our shoulders to something that's bigger than ourselves and not about ourselves. And it affects even the smallest things. How we think of our children. Pastor Jepp asked that parents with small children would spend one Sunday a month in the Sunday school. And so I exhort you, please don't fight against that idea. Pastor Jepp, he actually knows what he's talking about. He's been doing this for 20 plus years. And him and his team are brilliant. And so there's a reason why they ask that. Not just because they can't afford to fully staff all those positions. That's an issue. But actually the reason they ask you to do this, because he's bought so deeply into this idea that we are participating. That you don't just shunt off your children. That he's actually teaching you how to take your own role. And how to play a part. In your children's discipleship. And so I understand the reservations about that, because part of you thinks, if I've got to do that, then that's the one Sunday that something absolutely historic is going to happen in church. Full-blown revival is going to happen in church the Sunday that I'm out in Sunday school. And you're right, it will. Just because you thought that. No. I understand the fear, but even if it does happen just on the Sunday, something we've been waiting for, and guess what? It probably will not be contained in this room. It'll find some way to just seep out through the crack in the door and find its way to you in the Sunday school. We'll make sure of it. We'll serve you well in that. So that Sunday, go do that. And try to tell yourself, our kids are worth this. We have 150 children on a Sunday who are of the highest priority, and we put so much work of training them in the gospel. And so that's part of what a church is that builds for Jesus. It's building for the future, not just thinking of ourselves, our children, our children's children, people they will reach with the gospel, making sure they are well equipped. So of course we put a lot of energy and time and love and teaching into it. Are there sacrifices? Of course there are. That's the measure of something you love. That's how you measure something that's important to you. And so go take that. And tell yourself, I'm doing a good thing. I'm part of this community. And so I'm going to go help build it. And today I'll go think about other people, kids. And I'll go watch the video or do something like that afterwards. Number three, how we think about our church finances is a part of being a stakeholder in a community. For the last 3 months, our giving has been down, and we have been left with a small deficit, $50,000 to $60,000, which on a $1 million budget doesn't seem like a lot. But you don't want to continue operating like that. And with 650 people in our church, that it's not a lot. But we need to attend to it. And I'm going to need your help to remove that before our year end in June. There's a man who spoke to me maybe about a year ago and asked if he could come meet with me in my office. And he was so delightful to meet with. He said, Pastor Todd, my wife, most of her friends just happened to be in another church, and she would just like to be with her friends. So I'm going to support her, but I don't really want to leave our church. I really love it. And they'd only maybe been here for a year and really love it. And I really love where we're going. I love our teaching. But if I could just ask one question, how come you never teach on tithing? Because he said, tithing turned my life around. It's like tithing was one of the most amazing messages I ever heard. And I've been blessed so incredibly. How come you never teach on that? And it was such a beautiful, and he actually said, I love the Nepalese outreach, I love the buses, so even though I'm going, anytime you have a need in that area, let me know. Because it's a unique outreach, I want to support it. So, you imagine, like, not every last meeting, with the person leaving the church, looks quite like that. If you ever need money, phone me up. So that was really nice. And so I thought about it. Why don't I? And maybe I've got a couple reasons, neither of them very valid. One of them is that, actually our people have been very faithful givers. They really need a lot of instruction. They've been very faithful. And they really believe in what we're doing, and they show it in their giving, and I've got nothing but praise and nothing but thanksgiving, really, for our core. And if you speak on giving all the time, what does it sound like? We're never doing quite a good enough job. And that's not really the message I want to send. I really want to send the opposite message of how thankful we are for what we're doing together. But there is probably another reason, and it's really my own personal issue. I've realized maybe even this morning, and that is that I've had this feeling that speaking on money has probably been overdone in the wider church. The problem is it's not just a perspective. I realized this morning that I have made a judgment about the wider church on that matter. And the nature of judgments is when you make them, they come back on you. Do not judge, lest you be judged. And so here I've made this judgment that the church has been excessive when it comes to speaking on giving. And guess how that affected me? I just only realized this morning that having made a judgment now as a corrective measure, I have been more excessive on not speaking it than they ever were on speaking on it. In about a couple months, July 1st, that'll be 30 years of Christian ministry for me, 30 years of preaching, and I've only ever spoken on giving once. And people have told me, Jesus spoke a lot on this subject, and I always go, yeah, I know, but why don't I want to do this? Because I made a judgment in my heart. And so when you judge, you end up making a greater mistake than the person you judged. Always. God will even let it happen. So, great. Nice for me to realize that at 8 this morning, and I get to make a public confession today and ask God's forgiveness for making that judgment. And so I will renounce that and do things better. Just 2 weeks ago, a businessman took me out for lunch. It's the first time I had lunch with him. Again, it was so delightful. And at the close of the conversation, he says, "I notice you never speak about money." I know I'm getting this again. But he said, "It's important to me as my pastor. I want to know what your position is because I'm with this." He said, "A number of years ago, I wasn't part of church. I never cared if I was ever part of a church again. And now I've never loved Jesus more and I've never loved his church more. I'm in." But I don't even know where you stand. So how do I support it? Wow. That was such a beautiful request. So a couple things that are important to me. And that is that this is a big part of my own personal journey. So big that it's strange that I don't speak on it more. When my family became Christians, the Lord actually spoke to my dad in a service about giving. We didn't come from a Christian background and weren't familiar with the practice. And so only because the Holy Spirit spoke to him, he did that, but then it became a very big part of my dad's life. Not only would he tithe, but he would, when there were other needs, missionaries and kids going on mission trips and people in the church, he would feel a prompt from the Lord to do something, and he would do it. But I was a brand new Christian, 15 years of age, watching this. And the amount of times that I saw him, and just tears in his eyes, and he said, "Son, you can never outgive the Lord." Because no sooner did the Lord ask him to do something, then that set in motion a whole bunch of things, good things. And so I didn't even realize the way this was affecting me, but I now see that it did affect me and made me feel like that when you say yes to God in the area of finances, you sign up to a grand adventure. And that's what it was like for our new Christian family. It felt like we were riding the crest of the wave. You never knew what God was going to do next. Because my mom and dad were hearing him and were obedient to him in the area of finances. Whereas if they had been reluctant and held back, it would have been so different. So at 18 years of age, and this is a story for another time, God called me. I actually moved to the United Kingdom, began training in ministry, and there's a whole part of my story most of you don't know, but for 18 years, I lived without a wage. I traveled around the world, I did everything God asked me to, and I lived every single day by faith financially. And I literally lived on miracles every day for 18 years. So it's such a big part of my life. It's part of how I experienced the fatherhood of God, because he was to me a provider, and never a reluctant provider. He was an enthusiastic provider for me. It shaped how I saw him and understood him. So I have 18 years, that's just one chunk of my life, of daily financial miracles that would blow your socks off. I wish I had time to tell him. Here, one just one 6-week period. I was 20 years of age and God told me to hitchhike. Never hitchhiked in my life. From the American border in British Columbia to Alaska and back. But this is what he told me. To take a friend and to only take $5 between the two of us and no access to money. No cards, no debit cards, no Visa cards. And you couldn't ask for money. And then, so my mother and father actually dropped me off on the highway, thinking, well, I guess he'll phone us at dinner time. Because two 20-year-old men, $5 is not going to even pay for dinner. And I used the book of Acts as my guidebook every day. What would those guys have done? Well, another time when time permits, I will tell you of 6 weeks of the craziest miracles you will have ever heard. When I came back off that, it took us 6 weeks to do that trip. We successfully did it. I came back with not $5, but $60. And I came back to the pastor who sent us, blessed us to do that. He sat us down. He interviewed us, taped the thing. And at the end, he just said, I never even heard of such a thing like this outside of the book of Acts. I said, Pastor, that was my guidebook. That's all I use for my guidebook. That was just 6 weeks. I lived 18 years like that. And so it's signing up to the great adventure. So for someone for whom it's so important, I'm sorry for having done you the injustice of not speaking on this more. And so I want you to take a look in the scriptures at first fruits. Cain and Abel. The story of Cain and Abel isn't really a story of a brother killing a brother. It's a story of giving. Because there's two brothers who gave in two different kinds of ways. So one of them gave his first fruit. So when he would work, the very first of what it would produce, he would give to God. The first and the best. Where his brother would give the leftovers. It says, in the course of time, the NIV says, literally in the Hebrew means at the end of the season. He would see if there was any leftovers. And he would give his leftovers to God. So God came and said, I really like the way that that Abel gives, but Cain, your giving hasn't pleased me. So he's so angry about this, he kills his brother over it. That's first fruits. First fruits doesn't really tell you how much. It's a principle of make sure that the first, before you use any of your fruit, the fruit of your labors, before you meet your own needs, make sure a portion of it, the first of it, goes to God. And the best. It says that Abel gave fat portions. The best of what he had. And later on the question, I guess God asked, how much of your first fruits should you give? And so very early on, from Abraham, the practice was 10% a tithe. But tithe only makes sense in the light of first fruits. Tithe is just the amount. First fruits is the concept. And so this is practiced from Genesis to the last book, Malachi, where God speaks and says, bring the whole tithe into the storehouse. That there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Lord. And many of us have probably deviated from that practice. Maybe we use our tithe to pay for our kids' way through Christian school. Or we use our tithe to pay for Corpus. Or we use our tithe to help somebody at work. But that's a real deviation of the practice. Is that it says the very word of bring the whole tithe into the storehouse. So where Sherry and I stand, we have grown to love God's house. So we bring that tithe. We don't want anything in return. It's purely for worship. But then we have offerings. So we have another two offerings that we give that in our very first years here actually completely affected what kind of house we could live in. But to us, this was so important. This was the grand adventure we signed up. So we have another offering every month for children in poverty. And sometimes that's actually been used. That's not my tithe, that's my offering. That's also used for some people in Lethbridge who have been like orphans. They just haven't had motherly, fatherly care. So I have directed it there, but it's really money for orphans. And then I've got another one for young leaders in training, because I so believe in the upcoming next generation. And if you believe in it, it's got to affect my pocketbook. If it doesn't affect my pocketbook, I don't probably believe in it very deeply. So I make sure that I believe in those that God's raising up, and I want to put my money there. So those are offerings. Nobody requires it of me. It's part of, I offer it. Printed on the back of your little offerings, these are Paul's words in 1 Corinthians. He says, now about the collection for God's people. This is apostolic instruction to a first century church. On the first day of every week, kind of like we do it. Or maybe we do it because they did it. Paul telling him on the first day of every week, that's Sunday, each of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with his income, a percentage of your income. So just for those of you that think, well, this is only Old Testament stuff, I don't have time to do a full teaching on it. But it's very important. And so I want to get better on this point. It's a deep part of my own story, and I have not brought it here enough. And so for me, it was never a burden. This is one of the greatest parts of my adventure. And I want to see you experience the Father and His gracious provision in ways that I have and many people in our congregation have. So we have a small issue. We've got to pay off this deficit coming. But what I'm touching upon is so much bigger than that, and that is, in order for us to do what Jesus is asking us to do and build a glorious church across our country, to see his church renewed and restored, it's going to take all of our participation. And participation in many ways, in many forms, including finances. And so as we turn our attention now to the Lord's table and considering his free offering of himself for us, then maybe we'd let him speak to us about this. One last note, and that is to all our faithful givers. I look around here, and we have been so blessed. Thank you for your giving and for your example. And I pray you would help train the younger generation in the things that God has trained you in. Pastor Ryan.